Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, January the 3rd, 2017. This is our 334 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And before we get started, I want to thank, or let's all of us thank, James from North Wales, Pennsylvania. James, we appreciate you for paying to host Michael's hours on the internet so anyone worldwide can listen. Thank you, James. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis, and thank you, James, very much.
Yeah.
This is very different, you know, from a normal church. I like pastor at a regular church, and they have, you know, very big. There's a business. There's something we used to call it. I used to call it the business of church. Because, it is, you know, it's really a business. It's a lot of showmanship. Marketing, because there's a lot of ordinary type of income that is generated through gifting or tithing. They call that 10% of one's income. And, you know, in some of the bigger ministries, they're like really very big because they collect a lot of donations. And people have that extra money. But one of the interesting things that comes forward from those kinds of things is the propagation of, you might call it happiness, or what the churches call, generally call, blessings. And these are keyed back to certain promises that are within the Bible. And bringing all the tithe into the storehouse so that in that day they might have meat, and then, you know, God will open the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing which you have no room to contain, so much more. And for my experience in this effort, I gotta say it is true. It really happens. Now, the mechanism by which it happens, and circumstances by which such, you know, good luck, you might say, sometimes it may be good luck, but more often than not, it is a keyed on the development of a particular character of the individual, where they end up being able to spot opportunity and are able to, because of that, you might say, spotting opportunity, able to more than recover what they invest or give. And this is something that is kind of a wonder. It's always been a wonder to me. I wonder how God knows, you know. But then, you know, of course, he's already alive, very much, you might say, functioning within each individual through the divine fractal, the thought adjuster, whose guidance system now is very active and alive. And that is probably the reason for it, because you don't want to clog up the system with our system of, you might say, navigating life with totally erroneous and misguided intentions, and that it clouds the I guess you call it clouds the intellect, but really that mind that is clear and has that clear feeling of is able to think clearly, and because of that clear thinking, a lot of times opportunity is allowed to function forward. And physical space for some of the things that I have is like, yeah, it's like no room to contain. And it's absolutely true. So anyway, that's just a little bit about it. So those of you who give, like James, you're well on your way for being taken care of very well. In a kind of a special divine way, because we have other agents that are functioning that are there, seraphic agents, which are angelic, or are looking out for our welfare, you might say. Huh. Yeah, and they actually help, especially because it's an important, you might call it, effort for, you know, like this program. This recording has a lot to do with bringing in the next, you might say, awakening of truth. And that's very important because we move away from superstition to divine guidance. And in some places there, they look at, you know, it's kind of offerings and stuff or as kind of lucky charm. But this is more like what I'm saying. It's not really lucky charm. It's like clear thinking and being able to spot opportunity, being able to also have courage to move forward in when opportunity comes forward. Because you can see opportunity, but then you can like get scared away from it. And that is also part of the action of coming into knowledge. If you cannot act upon good knowledge, it's no sense in even having it. Yeah, so that's another factor that's involved in clear thinking. Uh-huh. So these are the factors that I saw in the practical sense that allowed individuals to hone, you might say, their skills wisely because, you know, they have made that commitment. And in financial giving, but then there's also the business of it. And the business of it, end of it is sort of scary somewhat. But ultimately, it ends up, you know, forwarding the overall awakening and understanding that people's contact, their contact to the adjuster, thought adjuster, is really a practical way of universe governance, and that we need to break into that governance, the divine governance, and many times wandering around lost and confused, people, you know, really don't know the real secret of happiness.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a little bit. Thank you, James, again, anyway.
Thank you. So we can start off with questions from Michael, 27 December. Heard from Lynn once again. She said, "Greetings, Curtis and Michael. I am finding this to be all so intriguing. Thanks for your efforts." And she has a few questions for Michael. She said, "Do the beings in the New Jerusalem state alliance to any particular sovereign? And what happened to the other 36 planets that fell during the Lucifer Rebellion? Has the quarantine been lifted? Have they recovered or are they still struggling? Have any of the contacts we have experienced come from any of the 36 planets?" And I heard you mention something about the bad aliens, negative ones. Who are they, and why are they bad? Now, that's a tough question. Mm-hmm. Is there some sort of universe authority keeping track of them? Thanks, Lynn, for sending those in. Thank you very much. Lynn is a Urantia book reader, and she recently found the site somehow.
And the first question was basically summarized as having to do with those, you might say, physical or material people that walk, because there are more than that. They're immaterial. They're spiritual beings over there in the New Jerusalem. You have, taken the time to look at what Cassini brought back. It's a material sphere. But whether one is a spiritual being or a being like us, physical, of time-space limitations, and or halfway there, like a Maranta being, having the capability of being regenerated, you might recharged, thus having a much, much, much longer lifespan, if not infinite, as long as the recharge continues. They were all there. They're all domiciled over there and interacting in unison. They fully understood it. And they did not seem to, like you're a lower class guy, you're underclassman here. Mm-hmm. It was none of that. I never detected it. Everyone understood. Although I knew that there were, like a Dano, who is one of the highest order of being. There are Trinitized, street teacher son of that high order, which is capable of very similar activity as being incarnated or taking physical form or having a type of transitional form which is able to move between the two, material and spiritual. Now, they were all functioning with the understanding of the first source and center, central theme, and the universe reality. They acknowledged, you might say, in the classroom environment, which I was like in, you might call it the first grade. And so there was one Maranta plant in front of it, this beautiful flaming plant that was Marantia energy in front of it, and that was first grade. And there are many questions that I got answered, but they also understood where, you might say, Havona is. They could literally map it out, and essentially were functioning in the ascent career. Now, as I said, I didn't feel like they had any of this, you're a lower classman or whatever. And it's understood very well where the order of things are, and where not trying to put anyone down. Yeah. So that's a good thing, and essentially a real factor in their behavior.
Yeah, Lynn asked, I didn't say that one word right, allegiance. Do the beings in New Jerusalem state any allegiance to any particular sovereign?
Well, the first source and center is the ultimate. That is, you might say, where I first heard the name or the description of God, central, what is the ultimate, the creator. As the first source and center. And this is something that they all realize, that they are functioning in that arena. So they had Tan had on his jersey, my shirt jersey, a very tight fitting shirt. He had a symbol which looks so similar to the Star of David. And I said, why do you have the Star of David? You know, you got the Star of David on. And he counted the points on the star. And I counted them, and they didn't count up to 6. They always counted up to 7. I don't know where that other point came from. But it seemingly that badge he was wearing was active and had an extra point sort of floating around in there. And that's a symbol of some people say that particular symbol is a symbol of the United, you might say, worlds. But it was spotted. I spotted that. I think Sheldon Neidel pointed out that type of a gold-based, kind of gold-colored Star of David. But it's not a Star of David, because I was told to count the points, and they were not the typical number 6 points. Different. It's a one extra somehow gets in there. When you stand back and look at it, it's a Star of David, but it's not. Kind of representing the aspect that they have been involved, and they wanted to get others involved, our race involved, in their destiny. It's maybe the root of where the Star of David, as we know it, comes from. So you might say they might have a similar basis of faith to the origins of the ancient, you know, Hebrew faith. But they also have a type that is very similar to Buddhists. The Huns who are walking, dressed in purple, walking in single file, or just moving in single file, sort of drifting along on levitating plates, kind of remind me very strongly, not just a little, very strongly remind me of Buddhist practices today. Buddhism, however, is one of the faiths that describes the thought adjuster, the divinity fractal, very, very well, and tried to get humanity involved. It came as a predecessor to Christ's incarnation, Jesus Christ's incarnation on earth. So it's an older faith, but they are, in my functioning with them, they are the ones that were very sad that the human race had fought terrible, terrible wars. They had, you know, where the Jewish nation or peoples were tried to be, you know, literally wiped off the face of the planet. And that's still the case of some faiths. Hitler, terrible inhumanity to them, was portrayed actively in their, you might call it, temple, and played along the walls. And that's where I got the idea that they were going to, you know, prosecute me as a human being for doing that. But that's where I came in and said, you know, don't blame me for that. It wasn't me that did that. they just kept looking at me, and in their look, they communicated their need for help from a human being, and to help them with this, you might call it a process of enlightenment and awakening. And that's where I said, yes, I'll help in what way I can, but, you know, I can't do much more than what I can do. And so please help me when I need help. And then, of course, they were, you might say, overjoyed, but it was a prayer that was wonderful and pure in terms of simplicity also. And it filled the room with a type of glory. And in the Hebrew, they call it the Shekinah glory, Shekinah glory, which was never seen in the temple. But they knew about it. And that is one of pure worship and thanks. So in this case, these beings must have been really purified in their worship, so much so that the emanation of this luminous, bluish, purplish light that emanated like an incense out of their temple, out of their foreheads, and then filled the room was absolutely a wonder to behold. So it represents also a link back to Shekinah, but also one that is linked strongly to, you might call it something similar to Buddhism. Because in Buddhism, there is also seen, let's say, many times in various portrayals of holiness, that there are these 12 beings that are called the celestial Buddhas. And I believe they had been working with humanity to uplift humanity's stagnation in terms of understanding the divine way. So they were trying to help. But just daily life and the fact that not everybody's easily attuned to the divine. They, you know, many times just get lost in daily life and never harmonize with what they were trying to show or teach. But much of it is in this. And it's not about creating another religion. Their religion, of course, is one of the ascent, the divine nature, to become, you might say, like God, be perfect, complete in Him, and be as complete in the stages of completeness and move along in the ascent career. That was understood. So, as far as religion or what side or anything, these are the things I observed. So, you can make your own assessment on where they stand, where you would stand within that, the framework. Where was Satan in there? Satan was mentioned in terms of Satania. And that frightened me. As soon as I heard Satania, I realized, you're talking about the devil, you know, essentially. Is this real? Am I in the wrong place? Are you the wrong people? Am I talking to the wrong people? Well, this Lucifer Rebellion had its holdouts, you might say, but the higher ups, you might say, the instigators of the rebellion have been put away. But the common everyday personality who function within, and these worlds which were in rebellion are still operating, but not in rebellion anymore. But they do have a chip, some of them do have a chip on their shoulder saying that our destiny is no better than theirs were. And that's where they kind of try to investigate clumsily our position in the ascent career. And at times they can get involved with us, but more times than any day, they're just kind of like probing. But one of the interesting things is that those who are active adjusters, in other words, attuned to the divine voice, they are very fearful of being put on the report, because although we cannot see the agents or the angels, you know, the agents, seraphic guardians of our destiny, who are defenders of our destiny, they can. And it's sort of like whatever happened to the very cruelest people in the Nazis or Pol Pot's numerous murderers that were involved. Well, they just went back into society. Some of them went into hiding. Others are trying to function in a world that is not like what they had envisioned it to become. So they're still there. They're functioning, not as the destroyers of particular type of civilization, such as, you know, like Nazism. What happened to the Nazis? Well, many of them who were very, very strong Nazis at one time, and, you know, they were like sergeants or something, they can talk about, yeah, how they remember how things were at the time when they're not, they don't believe. Some of them want to resurrect that. They're still operating. So these worlds that had fallen under some of these problems are being not necessarily given full liberty to function within the, I guess you might say, the heavenly economy. Because of the nature that they still may corrupt. So it's not perfect yet. The concept is we are actually heading into, you might say, a fully illuminated universe of light and life. And that has not yet taken place. We who are making the choice for the divine journey you might say, kind of a very special pool of people, and not included in their cutoff. We bridge their cutoff. Actually, we bridge it through divine methods, which is what a lot of the ideal of the thought adjuster bridging that. And along with that are the active interactions between ourselves, which make both our own individual, our own selves, and we're not islands, solitary. We interact one with another and the rest of the human race, bringing forth light and life, hopefully. there are times, of course, that may seem like it's not working, but it is overall. There's discussions and differences that are worked out in terms of the truth-bringing concept. So these agents were not necessarily spotted. I didn't see them in the New Jerusalem. They're outside of it. They do have higher technology. You can spot their technologies as being somewhat more basic in terms of, let's say, their flight ships are not interdimensional as much as we might think. It may take on, you know, fluorescence or illumination, but they don't have the, you might say, the high technology that is held within a lot of the craft that are functioning in the New Jerusalem environment. So their technology is more backward. They're not given all the newest stuff, you might say. Or they haven't developed the newest stuff. As far as that goes, it's just one of those things that comes along with, you know, being a world that was caught up in rebellion and it sort of stopped. They're watching heavily our development, and this is one of an important factor. Many of those that come and visit as students are visiting the experiment of Urantia, the uplift. They know that it will succeed because it was implemented in a different way by the universe creator, Son, Jesus Christ. And the order of things has not been in the same sense, but it has, you might say, circumvented some of the weaknesses that are I guess built into the nature of the other normal planetary uplift cycles. One of them being that it was allowed that a planet should be allowed to go to one race, one religion, whatever it may be. But for planet Urantia, it's more than that. It's a blend. That is not the goal anymore. The goal is actually a full awakened people who are well aware of the differences of the possibility of moving from one method of developing culture and or religion and systems to multiplicity of, you might call it, higher agents of development, where they develop systems which are ours. One of the things that was mentioned by Christ was that my kingdom is not of this world, which basically tells you that it's different, and this is allowed to go in a different way, and it's part of the development of Urantia that is different from other planets. So yeah, so it's interesting to see that in the Urantia book that this is the normal course, but we're not following it at all. We're kind of reinventing it as it is guided and allowed to conform. Within the New Jerusalem, I recognize the Agandantar. I was involved in conversation with an Agandantar. Also saw the Pinoptian little people. And They were the faithful ones. But also got to meet the Dorians, which were like clones of each other. Absolutely, they were absolutely identical. And they may have come from a fallen planet. I don't know. But it was one in which could get, you might call it, repaired much easier. I guess that would be my my observations.
She mentioned the 36 planets.
Yeah. One third, you know, about. There are more than that, but really, the number that she has, I don't fully know where that comes from.
I see.
Yeah.
And she mentioned about, she said, what happened to the other 36 planets that fell during the Lucifer Rebellion, and has the quarantine been lifted?
The quarantine for our planet, well, let me put it to you this way. The purpose of life was my question. The Daniel commanded me to come forward and walk in front of him back and forth. Basically, just walk in front of me. So I did. I walked to the right, to the left, right in front of him. Simple. In the initial stages of it was a lot of questioning going on in my mind. Why am I doing this? But I will do it because this is what he asked me to do. And I will do it in faith. Finally, he said, you are now perfect. Come with me. So I was made perfect by simply walking before him and be perfect. You know, there's commands in scripture like that, that biblical scripture that say, walk before me and be perfect. Be perfect as God is perfect. You know, this is the goal. But I ended up being able to have that type of pure obedience, whether it was with understanding or without. A lot of it was without much understanding what it was for, until I had the proper state of mind and heart. And then I was taken to meet the Verandadek Most High. These Most High observers were two. In every planet that has been found in rebellion has two Verandadek observers in observation of it, which is a large amount, because in a stabilized and you might say faithful system, they for the entire local systems, they may only have one observer over maybe even a constellation of systems. But in our location, in the New Jerusalem, or in the area of the New Jerusalem, where it was taken, there were two Verandadek observers, which means we're still under quarantine. Because if you have Verandadek observers, the Most Highs that are more than one, and for every planet there are two which were found in rebellion, there would be two, and there were two. One white light, which I spoke, and his words to me, the purpose, I asked the question, what is the purpose of life? What is the purpose of human life and all life? There he came forward to me and simply said, to become as I am. The other one, who was bluish color, stepped back. These are beings of pure light, the Verandadek Most Highs. anyway. Just to have them means that we're still under a quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Lynn asked, I heard you mention something about the bad aliens, the negative ones. Who are they and why are they bad? And is there some sort of universe authority keeping track of them?
Well, one of the ones I just mentioned, the universe authorities of Adirondack Most High Observers, which keep track of both the micro affairs as well as the macro affairs of humanity, and can are the only ones outside of Christ himself within a planetary system that is under quarantine, interact or act or change circumstances. It can be even to the point where they take sides in, say, in war battles, and sure, one should win over another. So they help to mold the planetary destiny toward divinity and the favor of divinity. An example can be seen in our recent planetary change right now, in which the Most High Observers were very involved in readjusting planetary leadership. When part of it was here in the United States, it was going to go the way that would end in the, you know, you might say almost the erasure of divine destiny, the purpose of life. But instead, you had an individual that changed it, Donald Trump. Then that's for the United States, which has money that says "In God We Trust," which basically was the foundation. In the European Union, you have "In Money We Trust," which was the basis for creating the European Union, the EU. That has undergone at least some, starting to be undermined right now, to bring back, the, you might say, the divine purpose of life, and make the shift, a paradigm shift, and it's with the Brexit, the British exiting the European Union, or the common market, or the market that says basically "In money we trust." They're going back to fundamentally having, you might say, their destiny guided by, you might say, living beings, people. It fulfills, "I will take out the stony heart and give you a heart of flesh." So the banking system, which has basically no life in it, is now being given some life. We'll see the changes. These things were allowed for by the Adirondack, or actually allowed the pressures to come forward, or even the destiny of individuals who were developed over a period of time to come forward with their job. It'll be realized that in order to change the destiny of the United States, we have to change the paradigm. The paradigm was basically bribery and money. Those that were put into power were those who could be puppeted around by those who had the money. In order to break that, you had to have no strings attached to these new rulers. And these new rulers had to have that characteristic, but in order to have that characteristic, it had to be developed over time. So people don't know it. Many times these who are part of the mortal core of destiny don't really know. Donald Trump probably doesn't know that he's part of it. He was raised part of that. But his background shows that he was definitely being developed toward a higher destiny. And that is for the, you might say, steering back the United States' role in developing a planet which is in alignment with divine destiny, the purpose of life. So, yes, quarantine happens. Quarantine has ways of, there are ways in which they get around quarantine. And for a planet that is under quarantine, the Gurandadek Most Highs are active, and including answering fundamental questions to a mere mortal like myself. Mm. You know.
Well, that's how you see yourself, but they saw your—they saw you as royalty. I think that was a cute little thing when you were looking around. What are they? Who are they talking about?
Yeah, the Danos that he announced to the room. We weren't sitting nicely in a classroom environment, like all loose. The chairs were scattered, and he said, "We have royalty in our midst." And I said, "Wow, we got a, you mean like a king or a queen or something there?" You look around, and then as I was looking around and seeing where everyone was, then I realized, oh my goodness, everyone's looking at me and nodding their head. You're the royalty in this room. Not sure why, but we have been given a destiny as royal priesthood, a holy nation. That's what Peter, the Apostle Peter, walked with Jesus, talked with Jesus Christ, and came forward with these, you might say, summaries of our destiny. And one of them is that our destiny is a royal priesthood, a holy nation that should show forth praise unto God. Whether he made us as kings and as priests, I believe that is true, because this is a destiny that's coming out of a fallen world that is going undergoing a creative, you might say, furnace, you might, the creative pressures. You know, one of the things that I have done is studied the metallurgy of the samurai sword. The metallurgy is, was put to me that some of the ancient metallurgy, this is, I talked to one of the modern swordsmiths and I asked him a question of where did this particular ability come from. He says, I don't know where they come from, but no one has been able to do what they have done very well. I think they might have come from outer space or something. And the idea of how it is made, you have the process of tremendous heat and pressure and hammering and molding and blending goes along, and heat treatment that is very sophisticated. that is similar to, you might call it, our own lives being kind of molded. In fact, biblically, he's talked about how the higher agents in our lives, like Christ in our life, or any of the higher agents that work in our lives, are sit at the seat of a refiner, like a refiner of gold. In gold, you know, let's say gold, you have gold that has been sort of gathered, but it still has some impurities. And then you heat it up a lot, and then you skim off the dross. When you do that, you purify it, but it takes, you know, pressure and hardship. And that's what our lives may indicate. And we skim off a lot of that dross and throw it away because it's something that you don't need or actually shouldn't be there. Because if you want to be a pure soul, you can't carry a lot of, you might call them, negative energies with you. And that's what was not there with in the New Jerusalem, was negative energies. It was always this wonderful place to be, a wonderful place to be with people, even if, you know, they are strange looking, you know, aliens. And as far as alien beings, are many of them strange looking, you know, they got big heads, and sometimes they're little, sometimes they're gigantic, sometimes they're invisible, sometimes they're semi-visible. They do strange things in front of you, but they're all wonderful to be around. That means they've got more perfected love in them than we do here. They're very active, yeah, active love. Mm-hmm. And that is the nature being perfected out of us, or in us right now. So we got to live life in order to get that way. And it's been a goal. You know, the wonderful thing that I received from Onise Avon, she drove out terror. I was terrified to see such different intelligent beings, people. They just... You know, I would be afraid to be thrown in the same cage, let's say, with a gorilla. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine being thrown in the same cage, like it's like 5 feet by 5 feet square, and gorilla's in there, and you get thrown in there, and you got like, oh boy, you know, that guy's so big, he'd tear me apart. You know, is he going to tear me apart? Well, it's nearly that kind of terror that I was undergoing, except there was not a being in there that was mighty and strong in terms of physical strength. What was mighty and strong in terms of spiritual and intellectual strength? They had telepathic ability and all that. But when Nella, when Onise Avon, she said to me, "Michael, don't be afraid." Just the idea that she knew my name was one more comforting area. Another comforting area when she said, "Don't be afraid." It was as if you could take love as a substance and pour it over fear and torment, and it would just push it away. Mm-hmm. It was like gone. And in its place was the most wonderful comfort and completeness that I've ever known. You know, and this is the kind of perfection I hope to develop in myself, and just having to experience it, I wonder about it, if it ever could be done in this world. But I try. And that's what this is all about, me trying to explain. And, mm-hmm. yeah. I have on this planet, on Earth, experienced many fallen, you might say, negative beings who have intention of, you might say, keeping us or me from ascending. And what is used are just basic, you know, basic stuff. And they try to spawn hatred, greed, or there's lower things. But to say, you know, these guys are no better than them. Look at these guys right now. They're acting like animals, you know. And they have successfully manipulated some people into behaving terribly and being justified. Some of the terrorism today is being spawned under their misguided theory. And that is something that is happening right now and being pretty much authored by these fallen ones. I don't know about if they're from this world. You know, they're stuck here because this planet was ruled by a whole bunch of them. 11 group of midwayers are faithful, but a whole bunch of them weren't, and they're still running loose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're allowed to go that way because we are not without defense. You know, it's understood that we are able to be defended. And that's where many of our angelic or seraphic guardians come in to help defend us. But our personal choice for, you know, choosing not to, you know, bow under their, I guess you might say, pressure, is our own victory. Something that is given really a high destiny to skip over the developmental worlds.
Well, we also heard from Nicola. We haven't heard from Nicola for a long time, but subject matter is Happy New Year. And Michael question, hi Curtis, wanted to chime in and wish you and Michael a Happy New Year. Hope you had a safe and wonderful holiday. We hope you have a good one too, Nicola. And he goes on to say, a very strange coincidence happened to me while listening to a recent Hello Earth podcast. I was driving to work a week ago, and Michael spoke about the number 1111 and its significance. As he was mentioning the number, I looked up, and ahead of me was a highway sign for Route 111, 1 mile away. I was taken back. Too coincidental not to mention. Anything behind that? And he ends with, looking forward to another great year from you guys. Stay well, Nicola.
The phenomena of the 1111 has been going on for a while, where our consciousness, or people's consciousness, has been steered toward looking at the number 1111. The 1111 is the number of faithful midwayers. These are beings of the secondary order. In other words, they came into being after the human race was upstepped. So the primary or the first midwayers came out of the interaction between basically alien beings in procreation. So when their procreative act, you might say, produced the primary order, not the entire primary order of midwares followed Lucifer, but nearly all. In the secondary order, we came out of, you might call them the superhuman development of, you know, procreative act. They actually were a little different, but not necessarily absolutely different or similar. They are mostly invisible, and at times made visible to humans, but mostly invisible. They tend to be able to do supernatural things to gain our attention. Though the secondary order, which were not included, were not faithful, many times the ones you hear about as poker guys. The 1111, however, are responsible for many wonderful acts of protection to particular individuals. Just the fact that they are pointing out that number, 1111, tells you that they are within your proximity. They are aware of you and that they are there to help you. You can ask for their help, and it will be just very simple. Many times they won't even, you know, tell you they're helping you. But there are times that you may want their help, and you can ask. And they can do things that are, you know, like, wow, how did that happen? And angels actually were done by these midwayers. Like, let's say one of them was releasing people from prison, different, you know, ones who were like locked up as maybe they were one of the disciples or something. This is after Christ had ascended, but they were stuck in jail, put in jail. The jail doors open, and this was done by the midwares themselves to release the individual to go back and, you know, continue work. This scared the heck out of the jailers too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it can involve scaring away real human people who are not good to you or not going to be good to you. Let's say a thief is going to come over there and rob you. Midware may step in between and just foil their plans. I had a couple times pickpockets just ran away from me just because of a midwayer's influence in protecting me from the pickpocket. Or another one was, I got a call.
Okay, we're back after Michael just had a phone call. So you were talking about midwayers, and they could scare some of them away if they were not good for you.
Yeah, they can scare real people, bring me just people, some people that could cause you harm. So they can actually protect you. There are times in which they can function as heroes. And I'll give you an example. I suppose it probably was a midware although it could have been a seraphic guardian, but not sure. My wife and I were on a whitewater trip in Bali, and there was a rainstorm upriver, and the river got real rough. So the rafter, the guide guy, who is supposed to be the expert rafter, which is dangerous, the raft flipped over, and my wife went downstream. And I followed her down. But when I finally caught up to her, she was in a very safe pool of calm water, hidden from the rest of the rapids. And her first words to me were, "An angel saved me, an angel saved me." And then said, "Oh, good." That's all I could say, good, because I was going down. It was really rough. I could really swim. You know, I had to just aim myself, you know, basically aim myself and bounce off rocks and stuff. I was going down feet first, which is the correct way. And she went down head first, which is absolutely the wrong way. But I steered myself, and finally, bumped into the boulder, and the water pushed me on it. So I was getting, going to go around. So I could climb over it a little bit at a time, inch by inch. Got up over it, and there she was on the back of it, in a calm spot. And what had happened was, she felt this strong pull on her life jacket. Yep. And the next thing she felt, like, wow, it's calm in a calm spot. And she was already saying, "I'm going to die. I'm going to drown." And but there she was in that calm spot. And I know that's true because I found her there too. And the physical tug on the back of the life jacket, somebody grabbed the jacket and pulled you, that she felt clearly. And found herself in that area. So I looked up the bank of the, because to see if anybody had, come down and just pulled her up and then ran away. There was no evidence of that. I mean, she was so positive that somebody came, and then it was an angel. So I made sure that it wasn't a person so I could thank them. But yeah, really. And that's an activity of a midwayer. Why do they get involved? Because we are precious. You're precious if you're especially trying to, enlighten the planet. Destiny, because it's trying to be snuffed up under, you might say, the cover of financial gain, which is something that really is easy right now to get.
Oh, Michael, yeah. I don't know why, but all of a sudden we're having trouble with Skype.
Okay.
You sound all right now, but we lost a couple words there.
Yeah, your couple was chopped up there. Your word couple was chopped up.
Yeah. Well, I love hearing about the midwayers, and they're making sure we're physically all right.
Yeah.
I mean, when they see we need help, they're right on the spot.
Sometimes, depends on our relationship. And our positioning. But one of the things is they're just letting you know, if you see the 1111, that they're wanting to help you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And you're already should be kind of like destined for the program of enlightenment program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So some of them, some people don't necessarily realize it. Others do. I'm not talking about being holy, holy in church, because apparently they don't follow that line of thinking. You know, yeah, they already have a different understanding of righteousness, you might say. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe this is a good time to say aloha, and we'll pick this up again next Tuesday. And love hearing about the midwares.
Mm.
And I like how you said you looked around for somebody to thank for helping to pull your wife into that little area where it was calm.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was around.
So I said, oh my, she is really correct. But it, you know, that happens. That's, you know, not just her, but I'm just using my own circumstance. I can name others, but that's one of the ones that I can truly say is a midware because of the physical tug.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they are like, let's say, like poker guys, but are not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Not the fallen midwares who are still running around. You know, maybe Kalagastia has been dethroned, who was the planetary prince who gave up his throne to Jesus Christ initially. He was the first, Jesus Christ was the first to, you might say, dethrone him. Because he was one of the key rebels. As far as the little guy, the other rebels, you know, like the midwares and stuff, the chief rebels like Beelzebub and the midware higher ups, they are taken away. But the little guys, they're still running around making trouble, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, Happy New Year to all. And
Happy New Year. Ha'ole makahiki ho is a Hawaiian, you might say, contrivance of language. Because there's no real ho. Ha'ole is happy. Makahiki ho is a change of year, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ha'ole makahiki ho. Happy New Year in Hawaiian.
Oh, Happy New Year, Michael.
Yeah.
All right. Aloha till next Tuesday.
Okay.